You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Leah Carter. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, May 9th, 2017.
We don't have a huge range of vocabulary to express how we're feeling. It's either, you know, sad, mad, glad. So it's like really surface level.
We hear a story about the stigma some local residents face as they seek mental health services. More on that later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also, coming up in the next half hour, we hear about resources to help local residents manage their money. That's on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
Marsh Supermarkets has filed a notice with the Indiana Department of Workforce Development stating that 16 stores in Indiana will close unless the company can find a new buyer or business partner. Included on the list of expected closures is the Bloomington Marsh location on North Kinzer Pike. The store, which has 83 employees, is scheduled to close in 60 days. All of the employees will be terminated at that time, and the company has given no indication that they can expect to be moved to other Marsh locations. The closing will leave Bloomington with only one remaining Marsh store on the east side of town. Last year, Marsh closed their west side location. Marsh recently sold all of their pharmacies to CVS, which led the company to cease stocking hard liquor to comply with Indiana law.
A Monroe County judge has sentenced one of the three people charged in the murder of Brittany Sater to 77 years in prison. Defendant Johnny Moore of Indianapolis was accused of ordering the robbery that ended in Sater being shot with a rifle last August. Sater later died in the hospital after identifying the attackers to police. Moore was charged with felony murder and burglary and received the maximum sentence of 65 years for the murder. Judge Teresa Harper added an additional 12 years for the burglary charge. Moore's history of convictions for dealing cocaine was cited as a factor in the sentencing. The jury reportedly deliberated for about 15 minutes before returning a guilty verdict. Trials are scheduled for two others involved in the crime later this summer. Billie Jean Edison and Dennis Webb face the same charges as Moore. They are accused of entering Sater's home in search of money and heroin, while Moore waited outside. Police say Dennis Webb was the one who shot Brittany Sater with a rifle that was given as payment for a drug deal earlier that day. His trial is scheduled for July 24th.
The Venue Fine Arts and Gifts Gallery at 114 South Grant Street in Bloomington will host a free presentation this evening by Nancy Richmond, the Executive Director of Volunteers in Medicine. The event begins at 5:30 p.m. Volunteers in Medicine is the only comprehensive healthcare clinic offering free medical services to low-income, medically underserved residents of Monroe and Owen counties. The volunteer organization believes access to healthcare should be embraced as a fundamental right to all citizens. Richmond will offer information about VIM's history, funding, and services, and answer questions.
Last week, the Bloomington Board of Public Works heard appeals to noise citations issued during Little Five Week. Board members Kyla Cox-Deckard, Dana Palazzo, and Kelly Boatman voted unanimously to uphold the citations in each of the three appeals brought before them. Deckard took the opportunity to reiterate what qualifies as a noise violation.
It's not a matter of the size of the gathering. It's a matter of the sound that's emitting from the residents. So a single individual could receive a noise violation citation who had a stereo up, just as individuals who are having a large gathering of people could receive a citation. So there's not a distinction between a large gathering of people versus a small gathering of a couple people. I've noticed that in the appeals, there's a discussion over like size of gathering, and that's really not a factor. I mean, people can make noise, but if there's excessive noise, it doesn't have to be a party, a large group of people. It could be a couple individuals.
The board was also approved an abatement citation for a residential rental property at 519 South Village Court. Housing and Neighborhood Development Compliance Officer Norman Mosier told board members that the fee and notifications for an abandoned rental property is first the responsibility of the landowner, unless they are able to prove a renter lives there.
The ticket is initially issued to the property. If the landlord or property owner presents a lease to our office within 7 days of the issuance of the citation, then the fine will move from the landlord to the tenant.
The board approved the abatement permit for that property. The board also approved a permit for the annual Bike to Work Day, allowing Grant Street between 6th and Kirkwood outside of the Monroe County Public Library to be blocked off on Friday, May 19th. The next Board of Public Works meeting is scheduled for May 16th.
The Bloomington Planning Commission agreed last night to proceed slowly and carefully in its review of a proposed student housing complex planned for the 300 and 400 blocks of East 3rd Street downtown. The project is being proposed by Annex Student Living, a subsidiary of the Indianapolis-based Mecca Companies. The site plan calls for 2 5-story buildings providing more than 14,000 square feet of retail space on the ground floors and 3 stories of residential units above. As he explained how he hoped the new complex would look, developer Steve Brehob showed an image of South Grant Street near Restaurant Row.
The common element in this view of Grant Street that jumps out at me is landscaping in the right-of-way, patio areas in the right-of-way, and sidewalk entries going up to each of these businesses. The sidewalk entries, the landscaping, the patios, that's a result of all of these being residences at one time that have now been converted to businesses. So that's what we wanted to try to replicate.
Attorney Kevin Roebling spoke on behalf of the developers, saying they have a commitment to diverse, affordable housing.
What does diverse mean? Diverse means that we're going to have market share housing there, of course, and then we're also going to have affordable housing. Now, what that mix is, we don't know yet. Certainly 10%, maybe 15%.
But commission members and members of the public voiced concerns about the project's height, architectural design, and the viability of any businesses located within it. Commission member Isabel Piedmont-Smith said the height, the materials, and the boxy design of the buildings didn't tie into existing structures in the surrounding area. The tallest of the proposed buildings would reach 60 feet. The maximum height allowed in that area is 40 feet. Commission member Nicholas Kappas said the project doesn't belong on a main downtown artery. He also called the rate at which student housing is being developed alarming.
We have to decide, what are we trying to create here in Bloomington from a development standpoint and from a policy standpoint? Long-term goals here, are we trying to literally push our limits upward, or is it just all about mass downtown? And I feel like this is just pushing mass downtown for the sake of this. The university is really close, so we picked these 2 sites and then we're just going to try and fit it in.
Commission member Brad Whistler indicated adding height and density downtown is inevitable.
I think it's really important that we do have additional height and additional density in the downtown in order to deal with the growing demand. If enrollment at IU continues to grow, we have to meet that demand. And if we don't meet it in dense housing very close to campus, then we have to meet it through sprawl throughout the rest of the community, which brings all kinds of additional problems.
Commissioners and the public also voiced concern about the businesses potentially located in the commercial space given the limited parking downtown. John Lawrence of the Council of Neighborhood Associations said parking is crucial for a business's survival, and Lawrence said he doesn't think the developer's proposed valet parking will be adequate.
The truth of the matter is that retail like this, it serves the neighbors who might walk in, but it's going to survive by the people that drive by. This is a busy street, and if people can't pull in and park there, then it's not going to happen. And the retail will go away, and then we'll end up with situations like we've had many times in downtown where we have theoretical retail, and then the developer says, you know what, I can't fill this retail. Can I turn it into something else?
Lawrence also said the pressure on developers to include commercial space and affordable housing components can drive out other valuable components. Commission member Heather Maritano voiced similar concerns.
We have a lot of retail that's not being utilized, and I'd rather see a two-story building that is a good housing unit than one. This looks exactly like all the other buildings where we're throwing in a glass front with housing above it. It looks like what we already have that's, sadly, some of it, the retail is sitting empty. So good architecture, good housing, as opposed to affordable housing and retail driving ugly construction.
The Planning Commission will review the project again on June 12th. Attorney Kevin Roebling assured the commission the developers will take its concerns to heart as they continue to refine the project. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The month of May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. According to the Indiana University Newsroom, roughly 2,800 Chinese students are enrolled at IU Bloomington and make up more than 45% of the university's international population. In today's WFHB Community Report, correspondent Sheila Raghavendran looks into one particular resource that is available to those students, counseling and psychological services. Each year, thousands of IU students seek help for mental health issues, but as Raghavendran reports, some students could be less likely to seek that kind of support.
The Global Burden of Disease is a study that measures the loss of health due to diseases, injuries, and risk factors. A report from the UK's medical journal, The Lancet, states that China and India make up one-third of the global burden of disease for mental health disorders. Dr. Larry Yang is an associate professor of global public health at New York University. He says mental health conditions are stigmatized in traditional Chinese cultures, partly due to the idea of losing face.
You can understand face in a simple way to think to be something like honor. Okay, so one's own honor or one's family honor. Being identified as having a mental health condition means you lose face. The reason that happens is because mental illness is actually seen as being caused by a different set of ideological factors, all of which implicate a person having some sort of moral failing.
Lei Wang is a third-year doctoral student in counseling and psychology at Indiana University. She is studying Asian American and Asian International mental health. She says the Asian cultural idea of family perfectionism and the pressure of saving face contribute to mental health conditions.
Family perfectionism is basically this idea of, so there's two dimensions to it, this idea of families having very high standards for the individuals, and then the other aspect is this discrepancy piece, which is when families have high standards, but the individuals are not able to meet those standards.
Yang says that in traditional Chinese cultures, face allows people to be part of social networks. He says it's important because it shows social standing and respect.
There's this notion of social networks, so guanxi or social networks. So guanxi is this really important concept. Face enables you to participate in these social networks. And the social networks are really, really important because they're actually a reflection of your social standing. And these social networks traditionally have really influenced the way that people feel about themselves, because it's really a measure of how well-regarded you are within the community.
Yang says that being part of Chinese social networks provides access to resources.
Within Chinese groups, another very particular characteristic is that it's not just social connections, it's actually material goods. So in these social networks, you can actually borrow things like money, typically money, honestly, and you can borrow from anybody within the group. The thing that holds us all together is because you have your face or your honor, you will absolutely pay the debt back to the group when the time comes. And if someone calls on you, you know, let's say another person in your group has wants to borrow money or has, you know, needs some kind of material resource, you will come to their aid. That's why it's so important to have your face. If you lose your face, then people will deal with you. They'll pick you out of these community social networks, and you will lose access to all these resources that, you know, other Chinese people have.
In Chinese culture, Yang says a whole family can lose face because of an individual's mental health condition. He says people believe that it's a reflection of how parents raise their kids. This goes back to the concept Wang brought up of individuals bringing shame to the family.
The individual's behaviors are seen as a reflection of the whole family. So that's why there's this idea of, okay, when I'm outside behaving, I'm actually representing my whole family.
Yang says that people can regain face through effort and achievement.
Loss of face due to depression, for instance, might be recoverable because people are more likely to be understanding, right? Hopefully you'll be able to go back and work and fulfill all your obligations, pay back sort of debts, you know, to your social networks. But if you have extreme loss of face, and that could happen, for instance, with, you know, even more severe mental illness, so for instance, like psychosis or schizophrenia. Let's say you had schizophrenia, then you did something very embarrassing to the family. You know, you ran out on the street naked or something like that, or, you know, so some kind of, again, these aren't normative behaviors for people with psychosis, but they can happen. Those things could be seen as very, very face-losing. And to come back from that type of face-loss, a severe type of face-loss, is very, very difficult. You may not be able to.
Yang says the implications of mental health conditions on a family can be long-lasting.
In traditional rural China, well, the traditional way of dealing with severe loss of face, you really only had two options. Number one is to take your life by suicide. And number two is to hide away. So what will happen is, for instance, and this is still very common in China, if, let's say, not even you have a severe mental illness, like, you know, psychosis or schizophrenia, but your sibling has a severe mental illness, the healthy sibling will actually move to another city where nobody knows them, nobody knows about their family, in order to get married.
Wang says mental health care providers need to be aware of cultural barriers to better treat their patients.
I'm from Taiwan. We don't have a huge range of vocabulary to express how we're feeling. So it's either, you know, sad, mad, glad. So it's like really surface level or very just not, you can't really get to like exactly how you're feeling. And so having being able to, you know, really identify how you're feeling, I think is a really important thing. I don't think that's necessarily the root of the issue. It's just like, it's just something that the culture doesn't really value as much. You know, that's just part of like the byproduct of, you know, what the culture is about and how culture shapes your worldviews.
Wang and Yang both say that Asians often don't seek help for mental health conditions until they become severe. Yang says that mental health care providers should be sensitive to the stigma in Asian cultures.
It's really a big deal for people to admit that they might have a mental health challenge. It's, you know, it's something that they may feel very, you know, quite ashamed about. And it's something that people have to process, right, in the treatment in order to really make full use of services.
According to Yang, some Hong Kong celebrities with depression have openly spoken about mental health and started to curb the stigma. Yang says that the stigma will lessen as people talk about mental health conditions, create organizations, and show recovery.
You can hear that report by correspondent Sheila Raghavendran on our website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Today we're here with Amy Lionbeck with United Way. Amy, can you tell us a little bit about United Way, the agency, and then I want to kind of talk about money management and the Financial Stability Alliance.
Sure, I would love to. United Way does a few different really critical things for our community.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So, So one of the functions is being a fundraising clearinghouse, gathering donations from the community and then distributing those to other social service agencies in the community that are doing great work to help them support their missions.
Right.
So that's one of the fantastic ways it streamlines the process for people. A lot of employers, even individuals, give one place and then they're supporting all of the work in our community.
Various agencies.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's one function. Another role that we play is being a coalition builder. So mm-hmm. we bring people together that are working on the same aspects of something or the same issues, and okay. we bring them together to work together. And then with that synergistic energy, we can get a lot more accomplished than we would all working on our own.
And I love that because there's a lot of resources in Bloomington.
Yes.
And so when we can bring them together, it often is more cohesive and a stronger effort.
A lot of the problems that we're trying to solve are interrelated and connected. So
yes.
when you pull one string on something, you find there's underlying causes of other problems. So that also helps having a lot of people in the room mm-hmm. that are all working on different aspects of all of those things. It's all connected, so we can get a lot done.
I want to focus on the Financial Stability Alliance, what that serves to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
How that helps our citizens here.
The Financial Stability Alliance is a group that United Way has helped form and leads. The goal of this group is to help everyone have the opportunity to become and remain financially stable.
Which is a key thing for anyone
and
in
that,
their life.
Yeah, and that can be threatened by mm-hmm. a lot of different events. So major health crisis
yep.
can throw you into debt. Students coming out of school with lots of student debt at the beginning of their lives
yes.
face a different, you know, struggle. We've got people that are about to retire and mm-hmm. haven't saved enough or have had other things go on in their life and they're not ready
yeah.
to go on to that portion of their earnings. So
mm-hmm.
there's, even small things like unexpected car repairs can throw you into
sure.
if
Absolutely.
You don't have that cushion
right.
of savings.
Yeah, so it's really, savings are key.
Yeah. So our goal in financial stability is to help people increase their income, build their assets mm-hmm. up a little bit so they have that cushion that they need, and develop their financial literacy and capabilities so that they can continue on that path and really thrive. We have Bank on Bloomington, which is a chance for people that have never had a bank account or have had difficulties in the past to get back into the mainstream financial services. So there's several banks that are participating in that, and that's a great resource. We know that bank accounts help people mm-hmm. be able to save money
right.
and get ahead. So
that's
if you
right.
don't have that access, it becomes a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Financial Stability Resource Guide that we've put together, which is just an all-in-one information about employment, bank accounts, financial education, tax assistance, services for people with disabilities, housing, and statewide programs. And that's on our website. There's a copy of that that can be downloaded as a PDF. And we also have a few more printed editions at our office. There's a lot more that we do. And if people want to find out more, there's a website. It's hosted by our United Way website. So if you go to www.monroeunitedway.org/FSA.
Okay.
There's a lot of information about what the Financial Stability Alliance is into. And can I just say, all of this work that I mentioned is only made possible by the community donations that we get. So
mm-hmm.
thank you to everyone in the community for supporting us to be able to do this incredible work.
Thanks for being here, Amy.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill and Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sheila Raghavendran.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Matt Griffin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.